This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, is the 8th music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. He was named music director designate more than 2 years ago after an exhaustive search, and last week conducted the opening concert of the new season, Verdi's Requiem. Here's Yannick Nézet-Séguin conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra in a 2011 recording of Verdi's La Forza del Destino. Yannick Nézet-Séguin is the music director of both the Rotterdam Philharmonic Orchestra and principal guest conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. He's also artistic director and principal conductor of the Orchestre Metropolitan. And he, studied choral conducting at Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey, clearly wearing many hats. And it's a great pleasure to have you here on Radio Times. And welcome to Philadelphia.
Thank you. The pleasure is all mine, really.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm curious about why you picked Verdi's Requiem as your, in a sense, your introduction, your hello to Philadelphia.
Two reasons. Well, three, actually. The first is, as you've mentioned, I am trained as a choral conductor as well as an orchestral conductor. So it was important to come to Philadelphia and showcase that vocal aspect of the repertoire, which I love and which I have been, and that's the second reason, I have been already cultivating with them, because we decided to design a series of Requiem, the great Requiem of the great composers, because most of them have put that Latin text of the Mass in music, and I believe that they are all masterpieces. So we did the Mozart Requiem 2 years ago, the Brahms Requiem last year, and it was only fitting that the Verdi would arrive, because I consider, and that's the third reason, I consider it as the most, not only profound, but really human, very sincere. I think we need to feel that we're really intimate with each other when we perform that piece, even if it's grand and you have trumpets everywhere in the hall. And I mean, you were there, so you experience. It's a grand work, and yet it has this intimacy that speaks directly to the heart. And for me, it was a symbol of the degree of intimacy I want to get with the orchestra and there with our audiences.
Well, you did an interesting thing on Friday night when I was there. And when the piece was over and the hall was very quiet, you stood motionless on the podium. And it must have gone on for maybe 10, 15, 20 seconds. And the whole place was quiet. And then, you know, slowly the clapping began. And then, of course, all the various standing ovations. But it sounded like you wanted to hold on to that moment, maybe for yourself, maybe for us.
When we are experiencing such, you know, strong emotions that this piece, or actually many of the works we perform with the orchestra on that stage, they many of them have to deal with subjects of death and birth and resurrection. And this Verdi Requiem is 90 minutes of hope, cry, and then overjoy, and hope again, and die, and reborn. I think we need that silence to reflect on what we have been living together. And I must say that this sold-out houses, which we had the whole weekend, by the way, this sold-out house in the Verizon Hall, we felt them so close to us. We felt all of you holding your breath. And I think this is why a concert is special. And that's what I want to do increasingly in Philadelphia, showing that it's not only to listen to recordings, which are great at home, but the experience of live music allows us to live something together, many thousands of people, and the silence It's a little bit like taking a minute of silence in a, to mark commemorate a special event. This is there's something really unique about the power of all human souls together and holding the silence.
This is an orchestra that's been around for a little bit more than 100 years. Where do you want to take the Philadelphia Orchestra? Forward, backward, sideways? Up, down?
Everywhere. No. Obviously, I'm now the new captain of the ship. It's a big ship. It's like a Boeing, or it's like a cruise liner. It's something that... It's not that it moves slowly. It actually moves fast, but it's not something that you manipulate like a small plane or like a parachute.
Tack back and forth or something.
No. So every small change of angle creates a huge impact in the longevity. And what I like, especially about Philadelphia, is that this orchestra has always been, when it was created and in its first years of fame with Stokowski, 100 years ago, was recognized as at the forefront of avant-garde. You know, it was really of its own time and developing new ideas. The Fantasia movie is one of many examples where Philadelphia was there to experiment, to have the great music of the great composers, but through a new media for the time, which was movies for a large audience. Therefore, if I want to go forward with the orchestra, we have to look in our own past. We have to catch again that spirit of being the leaders, the best sound, not only because we already are in the leaders and leading position, being one of the greatest orchestras in the world. Artistically, this is still recognized, but what we have to catch again is the pride of the Philadelphians in the city, which will allow us to show the world and be at the forefront of these new innovations, whether it's sound recordings, whether it's theater adding to the music, whether it's the whole environment of the music making. So I want to take the Philadelphia Orchestra, yes, more back to its roots in order to go forward.
And the idea of showcasing and preserving that Philadelphia sound, of course, that very lush sound of the strings, which is so much of its reputation.
This is amazing. Amazing because it's unique in the world. Well, unique. Very, very few orchestras. I would compare it to maybe two or three others in the world. Only Berlin, Vienna, maybe Dresden, which is the oldest orchestra in the world. That have this capacity to retain a distinctive sound that after a few seconds you can identify, oh yes, that's the Philadelphia Orchestra. And this is a treasure. It's up to me to cultivate it, also finding ways enabling and helping those great musicians to capture it, not again, because they have it in them, but maybe on a more consistent basis. And whilst honoring, for example, this Verdi Requiem, we had soloists. It's a work where the orchestra has to accompany and support vocal lines. That doesn't mean that it has to sound lean or too soft, without substance. They are able to play with a lush sound even when it's very soft. So that, this needs a technical way, and I'm there to cultivate this.
I do want to play, actually, you conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. This is Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, Pathétique. This goes back to 2008. And 2008 was when you first conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This very concert we're about to hear a little bit from is really my debut as a guest conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra. So arguably, this is where we fell in love.
I think we can hear that. And I should add that the orchestra sent us a selection or a section of this recording. Let's listen.
Thank you.
And that's Yannick Nézet-Séguin conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra, performing Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6. And the first time you ever conducted that orchestra, as you said, the sound of falling in love. What did you fall in love with?
You know, I was expecting something great, obviously, because of the reputation of the orchestra. And when I was growing up, I was listening, obviously, to many of the recordings, especially the ones under Ormandy and Muti. And this was a very major American debut for me, because I had conducted already many European orchestras, all the orchestras in my home country, Canada, and in the United States, very few, only Indianapolis and National Symphony Washington. And so to have one of the big five, like Philadelphia, was very special. And I expected something highly professional and really great. And like many young conductors, you expect that the orchestra will do its own thing. And, you know, I was not placing my expectations so high in a way about the chemistry, because I didn't want to put too much pressure on my shoulders. And then it took 1 minute, and I realized that these musicians were so available, so passionate, so committed, and that I could just do a little bit of something with my fingers, and we would understand each other as if we had been doing this together for years and years, or in a previous life. I don't want to get too weird here, but it's something really special and unique, and it's not only me. I think they felt the same way. They thought, okay, this is so obvious, and this is what we hear in that recording, and that's what we keep doing together now.
And that's our guest, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, the 8th music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. More music and conversation after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Drexel University supports WHYY. At Drexel University, the co-op experience is more than an internship. It links the classroom with real-world experience in the workplace, helping to transform Drexel students into entrepreneurial professionals. Most co-op experiences are paid positions, which can help offset tuition fees and loans after graduation. More information is available at drexel.edu/thinkingforward. Drexel University. Thinking forward.
I'm Marty Moscowen, host of Radio Times. Thank you so much for making a pledge of support during our fall membership campaign here at WHYY. We asked and you responded. In fact, the response from listeners just like you has been generous and enthusiastic, and we really appreciate it. We will invest your money in the programs that you rely on to keep you informed about all the important issues that face us all, and we'll keep you entertained as well. So thanks again for all that you do to keep WHYY strong.
Everywhere you look this month, you are seeing pink. That's the color advocates chose to promote breast cancer awareness. But behind all the cutesy slogans, there are real women with stories to tell.
To become a true survivor, you have to move on from this experience.
It is our roundtable of three women who are living it. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with Yannick Nézet-Séguin. He's the new music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. He's also the music director of the Rotterdam Philharmonic Orchestra, the principal guest conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And since the year 2000, he's been the artistic director and principal conductor of the Orchestre Metropolitain, and that's in Montreal. And we are playing some of the music that he has conducted and getting to know him. The season for the orchestra opened last week, and Yannick Nézet-Séguin conducted the orchestra as they did Verdi's Requiem. You were talking about that moment or two when you really conducted the orchestra for the first time. And I saw a quote from the concertmaster David Kim, who's been a guest on this show, and he said, "I felt the magic within the first minute," talking about you. So it sounds like a mutual admiration society.
Well, yes, and I think that's the key here. You were mentioning that the orchestra, you know, has had some time recently.
Some tough times.
Yeah, tough. And this orchestra is unique in its own commitment, passion. They see the music the way I see it, which is something where the maximum of emotions is happening. I think that the beauty of an orchestra is not that everybody makes his own contribution, that it makes a beautiful 100%. I think it's 100 times 100% of energy. Mm-hmm. And this is a very different aspect. And this, I guess, is what they felt and I felt. And I'm here and I believe in our future because we have this chemistry. If I wouldn't feel that the orchestra is completely behind me at this moment, it would be a very different thing. But we are such a team, and that's why I envision our future as bright.
But do you also feel the pressure of filling the hall, of promoting the orchestra, of dealing with the financial problems, making sure those seats are filled, the PR aspects of, mm-hmm. of being a music director?
Well, they go together, in my opinion. A music director in the 21st century has to consider all those things as part. It's not only that, oh, we make great music and, yeah, on the side we have to do PR. No, no, it's all part of the same thing. It's about sharing our vision, sharing our passion, sharing our pride into this real treasure in Philadelphia. And we have a very special situation where this city is a great city, but it's also small enough to have this neighborhood feel, but big enough to have everything wonderful in it. And it's I can feel that it's a city where the pride for the orchestra is great, but somehow there's a
disconnect?
Yeah, there has been, for many reasons, which, you know, it's we don't have to accuse anything or anyone, but there has been a distance, artificial, which has been between the pride and the actual support and the actual living the orchestra, being relevant day to day. It will not change anything about the composers or the artistic quality that we are presenting, but it's more about the packaging and the way of feel that every Philadelphian feels welcome to come to our concerts. Therefore, the electricity and chemistry I was talking about is the first key and quality to get that hall to be filled. You've seen, you know, how there were these sold out houses last Friday and also Saturday, also yesterday. Whenever I conduct and I come in, it's sold out. I can feel that the hall makes sense and that the musicians play better. And it's, you know, it's that kind of connection, that it's a good circle. Now, yes, I know it's on my shoulders to make sure that also when I'm not there, we make sure that we have a season which provides enough of great events and excitement so that we have this connection with the public. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that I really see as a very good opportunity now to rejuvenate this pride and passion towards the orchestra that the Philadelphians used to have.
I notice in the PR campaign, you're there wearing your blue jeans. It says Yannick. Do you want to be referred to as Maestro Yannick? Have you thought about the kind of formal title that you'd like to have people reference you?
The most important thing, Marty, is that people feel that this is all genuine. I've always tried in my life to be genuine and to be honest, and I think that's the first quality of a conductor and also of an orchestra. We want to express freely what we who we are and what we are about. People naturally in the orchestra call me Maestro sometimes, and sometimes they call me Yannick. And so we decided for us, there shouldn't be that artificial frontier
barrier.
Or this kind of barrier, yes, thank you, between the Maestro thing as an artificial distance that we put. Maestro is a question of respect, of honoring that I'm there to be the leader. And in Italy, for example, they will call everyone of the orchestra, every musician is maestro, you know. Yes, because every one of these musicians of the orchestra here in Philadelphia could be called maestro because they are the highest skilled possible musicians. But also it's great to have this feeling that we're normal human beings and we want to be touched. And I want people in Philadelphia to feel I am a part of this city. Increasingly, I'm one of them. And that's the magic of the music. We create on the highest level of music. Yes, we have to create that respect, but we also are normal people who express normal feelings and emotions to everyone. And this is why Yannick seemed really fitting. Anyone on the street can call me Yannick and I will never be offended.
You are affiliated with a number of different orchestras. As it stands now, where is home for you? Is it a suitcase and a hotel room? Or
home, I will always feel a very close connection to my hometown, of course, Montreal. And my cats live there. So whenever I go back there, I feel I'm welcomed by my cats.
They're not mad at you for being away?
No, because now they are two or three, together. And they give a little attitude sometimes. But you know how cats are.
I do.
In Philadelphia, it will, from next season onwards, will be the most and quite clearly the most time, the biggest chunk of my life I will spend here, which therefore I will increasingly feel like home. But I have to say, I already feel so much like home here because people in Philadelphia are welcoming, people are warm, people are direct and honest, which are all qualities I value in my own life. Therefore, it's... this chemistry is not from nothing, right? I think it's coming from a genuine connection with the city.
And that's Yannick Nézet-Séguin. He's the new and eighth music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra, joining us today in Radio Times as we talk about his career. We will be talking a bit about growing up in Montreal, and we're playing some music as well. And I do want to play you conducting the Mahler Chamber Orchestra. This is 2012, and it's a duet from Don Giovanni. And I should say that you have a relationship with Deutsche Grammophon. You're going to be conducting the last seven of Mozart's operas.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It's a new connection that we have now, a new association with the top classical music label, which saw Karajan and Bernstein and Giulini and so on making music for that label. And I will conduct not only operas, but also some symphonic music. Who knows? Maybe, you know, soon enough, the Philadelphia Orchestra might be on that label.
Oh, that sort of question hangs out there. But was it your idea to do these seven Mozart operas, or was it theirs?
It came naturally, which is also credit to how this label is thinking. We were doing this Don Giovanni in concert and decided to record it with this top cast of international soloists, including Rolando Villazon, who's singing the Requiem with us this week. And we had so much fun doing this that we decided that it would be great to record all of the seven in the same context, which is a concert performance, so no staging, but it's still live, so you get a great sense of energy. And I believe we'll hear now the La Ci Darem la Mano, the famous duet between Zerlina and Don Giovanni. It's Ildebrando d'Arcangelo and Moitza Erdmann with the Mahler Chamber Orchestra.
I'm so glad you said that. Let's listen.
La Ci Darem la Mano, la mi dirai di sì. Vedi non è lontano, partiam ben mio da qui.
Vorrei, non vorrei, mi tremo noi con, felice
And again, Mozart's Don Giovanni, a beautiful and very famous duet. And you're conducting, Yannick Nézet-Séguin.
Yes, beautiful side of me, which is important to me, the opera world. And as I was saying earlier, this was also one of the reasons this Verdi Requiem was important. But people often ask me, are you more an opera conductor or a symphonic conductor? And if I look at everyone I admire, well, let's start by our own Riccardo Muti here, sure. And or Wolfgang Sawallisch more recently. He was as much at home in opera than symphonic. I consider this as part of the same great wealth of treasures of masterpieces that we have to perform. And to get the Philadelphia Orchestra increasingly in that repertoire means hearing those wonderful scores played by the best orchestra, you know, which is great as well.
You grew up, you were born, grew up in Montreal, and took piano lessons, I guess, as a little boy. When did you first start twinkling the keys, as we say?
There was a piano downstairs in the basement of my parents' house. They had taken piano lessons when both of them, when they were very young. And so my older sisters did also take piano lessons. I was supposed to have violin lessons for a change. And the day before my first lesson, I said, no, I want to learn piano also.
So, and how old were you?
I was five. And I liked it, but I never was really disciplined. I was interested in too many things, piano, theater, a little bit of sports, drawing a lot, painting. And one day at school, some people came to recruit for a church choir. And I was 9 years old and I decided, yes, to try this. And this is where really I fell in love with music. And I believe if I fell in love with music, singing, not only because of the voice, but because it allowed me to make music in a group with other people, which is the real significance of being a conductor, making music with many people, hundreds of people, and yet having my own role as a conductor. So I believe this is why at age 10, I made that decision to become a conductor, which is unusual.
It is. It is. That's pretty young.
My parents looked at me and when I said that, and they said, oh, yeah, great, and thinking I would change my mind 2 weeks later, you know, like, oh, yeah.
I'm sure they're very disappointed in how your career has turned out.
You know, they traveled with me a lot. They were here for the opening weekend, obviously. Yeah. Now they're in Montreal. It's so close, right, to fly from Philly to Montreal. So they're in Montreal just for 2 days. We'll be there tomorrow in New York. For Carnegie Hall.
And do you have a good voice? A good singing voice?
Okay, I don't have a pretty voice. I have a very useful voice.
Were you told that, or you figured that out for yourself?
No, it's because conducting choirs all my life, it meant that I never stopped. When my voice changed as a teenager, I never stopped singing, so I could for a while, and I still can. If you ask the orchestra musicians here in Philadelphia, they will tell you that I can actually sing every example in every key, every register, and it makes them laugh a lot, and sometimes they applaud, right, and they're very gracious. But it's not necessarily pretty, but I can sing like a soprano and I can sing like a bass. So that's helpful for giving, you know, the message of how I want a certain passage to sound. But I would never have dreamt to be a vocal soloist of any kind, no.
But do you approach conducting the way you might approach conducting a choir, that you think of the orchestra as many human voices?
Yeah, precisely. You said it. It's to me, it's not a different thing. Obviously, okay, the technique of each instrument is very different, and it's more complex to have all of the different musical instruments and groups than having only voices. However, it's the same thing. People in the orchestra have to breathe. Even string players who are not blowing into the instrument, they have to breathe. Music has to breathe. Music has to always accompany another voice. If the principal oboe is playing a melody, or the principal flute, or if it's the entire section of the cellos playing a melody, the rest of the orchestra have to listen the same way that a chorus or a choir has the sopranos to lead sometimes, or the basses to lead, or in an opera, we have to accompany always. So it's part of the same listening, breathing. It's really a key element for me in my own music making.
What do you do before a concert? Are there certain rituals or things that you do to prepare for an evening of conducting?
I'm not really superstitious. You know, I don't have a real routine. I use, for example, to be terrible at naps, taking a nap. For me, and it was always this way. I remember
even as a little kid.
I never wanted to have my afternoon nap. I would cry not to sleep, you know. Now I'm getting a little bit better at this, but I prefer to, in an afternoon of a concert, I prefer to do some jogging or training, a workout, which is also important for my body not to get injured while conducting. Just before a concert, maybe the only small gesture I'm making is to hold my ring here that I have, which was my grandfather's ring. And my grandfather passed away in 1997, which means he never really got to see me conduct the way I'm doing now. But he was very close. I was very close to him. So this is my good luck ring.
But do you go and do you go over and over what you're going to conduct, or do you figure by then it's all integrated?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, because as conductors, the most nerve-wracking moment is not the actual concert. It's prior to the first rehearsal. This is where my own preparation of a score meets the group, sharing the vision with the orchestra. And especially when we talked about my debut in 2008 here in Philadelphia, meeting a new group is terribly stressful because, okay, my parents were teachers, so they were always talking about year after year meeting a different class of different students. You do the same thing every year, and yet it's nerve-wracking because you have to create a certain chemistry right from the first moment. And you cannot create that, you cannot plan it so much. So for me, when it's before the concert, it's more about being in the right mindset and mood to express. But most of my work is already done in rehearsal.
And that's Yannick Nézet-Séguin. He's the new music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation and more music as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
The South Jersey Tourism Corporation and GPS Incorporated are proud to support WHYY and present the Vintage South Jersey Wine and Beer Festival, October 27th and 28th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Campbell's Field on the Camden waterfront. The festival follows the inaugural spring event, which features wineries of the Outer Coastal Plain and craft beers from local breweries, in addition to more than 200 South Jersey wines. Artisan vendors and live music are part of each day. More information at vintagesouthjersey.com/festival.
The next Fresh Air, making and marketing indie films by and about African Americans. We talk with Ava DuVernay. Her publicity agency marketed films by directors like Spielberg and Eastwood. She wrote and directed the new film Middle of Nowhere, which won the Best Director Award at Sundance. It's distributed by the African American Film Festival Releasing Movement, which she co-founded. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Vulnerability is not weakness. According to Brené Brown, author of Daring Greatly, vulnerability is the only way we can have truly intimate, honest relationships. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, Brené Brown talks about the gifts of vulnerability. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Again, talking with Yannick Nézet-Séguin, the new music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. I should add that he is the music director of the Rotterdam Philharmonic Orchestra, principal guest conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra, artistic director and principal conductor of the Orchestre Metropolitain in Montreal. That's a job he's had since the year 2000. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studios, talking about his life in music. I do want to play something else, and this is a bit of a change, and it's you conducting the Orchestre Metropolitain du Grand Montréal. Sorry about the
perfect.
The accent there. This goes back to 2005. And this is an excerpt from Kurt Weill's Three Penny Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And before we listen to it, and I happen to love the music from the Three Penny Opera.
Great.
What do you appreciate about Kurt Weill?
I think that these composers, and there are not so many of them, but people like Gershwin, Kurt Weill, Nino Rota in a different sense, they all were classically trained composers who helped doing that blend, which we call nowadays something like crossover. But crossover has different meanings in the 21st century. And I think what these composers were able to do was more bridging different kinds of music of the highest quality. And this is why I did recordings of Nino Rota, some concertos and some suites from his film music. Kurt Weill, on that CD, we did the Second Symphony, which was premiered by Bruno Walter in Amsterdam. You know, you can't get more serious music than this, and yet he had this real gift for music that could speak to the masses and reach the heart through theater, like the Three Penny Opera.
And this is Diane Dufresne?
Yes, she's a wonderful pop singer, well respected in Montreal.
La fiancée du pirate. Let's listen.
Oui, c'est moi qui lave les verres et les plats. On m'appelle une Marie, couche-toi là. Quand on me donne un penny, faut encore que je dise merci. Me v'lant en habit loqueteux, au fond de cet hôtel miteux, vous ne savez pas aujourd'hui qui je suis. Vous ne savez pas aujourd'hui qui je suis. Mais ce soir, beau soir, grand branle-bas, les gens courent sur la rive, disant voyez qui arrive. Et moi, je sourirai pour la première fois. On dira, voilà que tu souris, toi. Un navire de haut bord, sans canon au sabord. Moi toujours, je laverai les verres et les plats. Je serai toujours une Marie, couche-toi là. Quand on me donnera un penny, toujours je dirai merci. Je garderai mes habits loqueteux au fond de cet hôtel miteux. Et demain, demain comme aujourd'hui, vous ne saurez toujours pas qui je suis. Mais un soir, ce beau soir pour qui je vis, voilà que les cent canons s'éveilleront et tonneront. Pour la première fois, j'éclaterai de rire. Quoi méchante, t'as le cœur à rire. Un navire de haut bord, sans canon au sabord.
That's Diane Dufresne singing La fiancée du pirate from Kurt Weill's The Three Penny Opera with lyrics by Bertolt Brecht. That recording provided by Atma Classique. Do you feel like you're part of a new generation of conductors? I mean, you're included in that list. Do you feel part of a new generation?
Well, there's obviously a worldwide phenomenon at the moment of the, people who are given at a young age, under 40, great responsibilities with great institutions. And this is different than what we've seen in the past. However, I'm also putting this into more relative thinking that if I look at the Philadelphia Orchestra's history, most of the music directors were given this responsibility in their 30s, like me. People like Karajan, Toscanini, Carl Böhm, they all started conducting when they were 18, 19, 20 years old, like I did. Which means that the real difference now is that our world does expose our work much more because of the internet, because of faster-paced media. Therefore, it's a lot of responsibility, but not so unusual. So I hesitate to call that we're so different than our predecessors. I don't think so. I'm lucky that a great orchestra like the Philadelphia Orchestra is giving me, enabling me to lead them into this century. And yes, we have a different way of thinking than predecessors. I like jazz, I like R&B, I'm of my time, I like Radiohead. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. But Stokowski, if he had lived now, he would be on Facebook and Twitter big time, I'm sure. So again, our whole history here is so avant-garde that I just feel that I'm in the same line.
Well, you were, I know, a mentor, I guess, of Charles Dutoit, who, of course, has been leading the orchestra for the last couple of years. A big influence on you?
Well, he was the first conductor I saw because he was also, and that's important to note, he was really well exposed in Montreal as a real leader that I could see him, hear him on radio, see him on television, in the front page of the paper, the way I'm starting to see myself now here in Philadelphia. And I think that's crucial to get the attention and the imagination of the kids going, just to see that it does exist and that they should feel they could touch this. Mm. Then I asked my parents, oh, I would like to attend a concert. And it got my interest. So Charles Dutoit was very important in being this figure who made the music accessible for every generation in my own town of Montreal. And this is the same kind of mission I have here.
I do want to play another piece, you conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. This is an excerpt of Gustav Mahler's Fifth Symphony, recorded in 2010. Do you have a special affinity or feeling for Mahler?
Mahler is the composer who speaks to us, I think, the most at this moment, over 100 years after he composed all these great symphonies. He was a visionary, and he was about a lost world, reflecting a lot, very emotional, and yet still enabling us to dream about a better future. And this is why this orchestra in Philadelphia and me, we connected, bonded very much around the music of Mahler. And I'm convinced that more and more young people can fall in love with classical music through Mahler.
Let's listen. Again, an excerpt of Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 5, recorded in 2010. And the Philadelphia Orchestra sent us this piece of music as well. And it's just so moving and beautiful.
We certainly can hear the sound in this piece, you know, the sounds of the strings. And it's something remarkable and unusual how many people also come from a same school of thought in the playing, not only in the strings, but in every in everywhere in the orchestra, because we have so many great teachers in the orchestra, and they do transmit, whether it's at Temple, whether it's at Curtis, they do transmit their craft to a lot of students, which, you know, in the auditions end up also very often winning an audition because they have the same purpose of the sound and music that we want to nurture here in the orchestra. So this of course does help creating that kind of sound of unanimity.
We've been talking about several debuts for you. You have your Carnegie Hall debut tomorrow night, yes?
So exciting. So exciting. It's, you know, it's one of the greatest halls in the world. And I have conducted in most of the historic halls in the world, in Europe. And for a while, I was wondering, when will my Carnegie happen, you know? And there was a reason why I had to wait. It's because I had to wait to go there with my own orchestra. And I think that's really special. It makes it extra special to go there with that Verdi Requiem, and meaningful that it is with my Philadelphia Orchestra. And we will continue playing at least three times a year there in Carnegie, which is great.
You know what they say about Carnegie Hall? To get there, you have to practice, right?
Well, we certainly do.
You have coming up actually next weekend the world premiere of Gabriella Lena Frank's Cusqueno,
yes.
Bernstein's Serenade and Brahms Symphony No. 4. How do you plan a year of performances, concerts?
This is one of the most fascinating aspects of my job because it's like a menu. You have the same ingredients, and because I feel Brahms as Bernstein, of course, as a new piece by Gabi Frank, or Bach, or Mahler, or Tchaikovsky, they're all relevant. We have this wealth of masterpieces that we want to show the audience and perform. However, it's all in how we align them, how we put them together, or create clashes or connections which are unexpected. If we eat vegetables every day, we don't want to have the same salad. It can be the same vegetables,
right,
but they have to be presented differently. Mm-hmm. So this is what we designed, especially in my 2 weeks of opening. There was opening night with René Fleming and this Brahms, and the same Brahms 2 weeks later, which is one of the core pieces of the orchestra repertoire and a composer which is very close to me. But I wanted to put it in connection with Bernstein, and especially this Serenade, which is a work in tribute to philosophers in general, and has some fugues and some very old style writing in it, but being very modern and rhythmical, like he always was doing, which connects also to some Latin American origin piece that we're premiering. So all of this creates a new menu, and my goal is to create those connections for the audience more and more, not only in one program, but across the season and in multi-seasons plans, like this series of Requiem we were talking about earlier.
We're almost done here, but as I said at the top of the hour, you wear many hats. Are you going to be able to keep up with your own self-imposed schedule? You said yes to all these things, yes?
Yes, of course. I'm 37. I'm really, it's the time for me. God has given me more energy than average, and I intend to take care of that energy, not spoil it. But I think I feel I'm the right man for the situation here in Philadelphia, so I'm just so much looking forward to keep all these and wearing all these hats for the orchestra.
Well, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, and congratulations on your new job.
Thank you for this opportunity to meet the audience in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. And he's the new music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. And we're going to close things out with the overture to Verdi's La Forza del Destino. We heard the very beginning of it, but we're going to hear the end of it as we end this hour. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, the overture to Verdi's La Forza del Destino. again, La Forza del Destino from Verdi's Requiem. Coming up next, it's Voices in the Family with your host, Dr. Dan Gottlieb. Tomorrow in the first hour of the show, we are going to analyze the first and final presidential debate, then the saga of cyclist Lance Armstrong. Today, he was stripped of his 7 Tour de France titles. We'll be talking about an extensive doping investigation. That's tomorrow's Radio Times. Hope you can join us.